Hi, this is Evan Karish, Editor-in-Chief of Anesthesiology, with some highlights from the May 2018 issue, as selected by the journal editors. The May 2018 issue is the Journal Symposium edition, featuring several articles whose data were first presented at the 2017 ASA Journal Symposium, Frontiers in Opioid Pharmacotherapy, sponsored by the journal Anesthesiology. Our first article reports a database study on opioids and multimodal analgesia. Multimodal analgesia is increasingly considered routine practice in joint arthroplasties, but supportive, large-scale data are scarce. Dr. Stavros Mamtsoudas of Weill Cornell Medical College, New York, and colleagues there and at Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York and at Stanford University set out to determine how the number and type of analgesic modes is associated with reduced opioid prescription. They also examined complications and resource utilization. The researchers examined data from 500,000 total hip arthroplasties and 1 million total knee arthroplasties from 2006 to 2016 in the Premier Perspective database. The authors divided procedures by analgesic mode, including opioids, peripheral nerve blocks, acetaminophen, steroids, gabapentinoids, NSAIDs, COX-2 inhibitors, and ketamine. They then further categorized groups into opioids only and one, two, or more than two additional modalities. Multi-level models measured associations between multimodal analgesia and opioid prescription, cost and length of hospitalization, and opioid-related adverse events. Overall, 1.3 million, or 86% of patients, received multimodal analgesia. In multivariable models, with each increase in the number of modalities, there was a stepwise decrease in opioid PCA use, opioid prescriptions, and some opioid-related side effects. There was not, however, any difference in the cost of hospitalization. NSAIDs and COX-2 inhibitors seemed to be the most effective modalities used. While the optimal multimodal regimen is still not known, these findings encourage the combined use of multiple modalities in perioperative analgesic protocols. The next article is another retrospective study of patients on chronic opioids. We know that unplanned readmissions remain a significant component of healthcare expenditures, and also that the prevalence of opioid misuse is rising. But the extent to which opioid abuse or dependence affects readmission rates and healthcare utilization is not fully understood. Dr. Atul Gupta and colleagues at the University of Chicago tested the hypothesis that surgical patients with a history of opioid abuse or dependence would have higher readmission rates and healthcare utilization. They performed a retrospective cohort analysis of patients undergoing major operating room procedures in 2013 and 2014 using the National Readmission Database. They used ICD-9 codes to identify patients with opioid abuse or dependence. The primary outcome was 30-day hospital readmission rate. Secondary outcomes included hospital length of stay and estimated hospital costs. There were 16 million patients who had a major operating room procedure whose death status was known. Of these, 95,000 had diagnoses of opioid abuse or dependence. Patients with opioid abuse or dependence had slightly higher 30-day readmission rates of 11% versus 9% for opioid-naive patients. The most common reasons for readmission in patients with opioid abuse or dependence were infection in 27% of patients, an opioid overdose and acute pain, each in 1% of patients. These three readmission causes were more common in patients with opioid abuse or dependence. These findings led Gupta et al. To conclude that opioid abuse and dependence are associated with increased readmission rates and healthcare utilization after surgery. Next, we look at a proposed new method of assessing clinical opioid safety. Previous studies have integrated opioid benefit and harm into one single function, called the utility function. This factors drug toxicity, specifically respiratory depression, in comparison to its desired effect, specifically analgesia. Dr. Margot Rosenkrantz and colleagues at Leiden University Medical Center, Leiden, the Netherlands, conducted a study to further refine the concept of the utility function using the respiratory and analgesic effects of the opioid analgesic alfentanil. They combined data from three previous studies in 48 healthy volunteers using a population pharmacokinetic pharmacodynamic analysis. They defined four specific conditions: the probability of adequate analgesia with and without severe respiratory depression, and the probability of inadequate analgesia with and without severe respiratory depression. The authors found that optimum analgesia probability without serious respiratory depression is reached at an alfentanil effect site concentration of 68 nanograms per mil. This concentration exceeds the probability of the most unwanted effect, inadequate analgesia with severe respiratory depression. At higher effect site concentrations, the probability of analgesia is reduced and exceeded by the probability of serious respiratory depression. The authors concluded that the utility function successfully followed assessment of specific conditions in terms of wanted and unwanted effects. This approach can be used to compare the unwanted effects of drugs relative to their desired effect. Our next article addresses FDA drug approvals. With increased numbers of opioid analgesics receiving FDA approval since 1997, there are concerns that new opioid products are driving prescribing. However, the relationship between prescribing patterns and product approvals is not well understood. Dr. Grace Chai of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and colleagues there and at the National Institutes of Health investigated whether the introduction of these new drugs increases prescribing. They assessed prescribing patterns based on dispense prescription claims with new brand and generic opioid analgesic products approved in the U.S. from 1997 to 2015. From 1997 to 2015, the FDA approved 263 opioid analgesic products, including 33 brand products. Dispensed prescriptions initially increased 80% from 145 million prescriptions in 1997 to a peak of 260 million prescriptions in 2012. prescriptions then decreased by 12% to 228 million prescriptions in 2015. Morphine milligram equivalents dispensed per prescription doubled from 486 in 1997 to a peak of 950 in 2010, before decreasing to 905 in 2015. In 2015, generic products accounted for 96% of all opioid analgesic prescriptions dispensed. The remaining prescriptions were dispensed for brand products, of which nearly half were dispensed for one brand product, OxyContin, marketed by Purdue Pharma. The investigators concluded that the approval of new branded opioid products alone does not appear to be a primary driver of increased opioid prescribing. Our next article reports clinical studies of a new opioid delivery mechanism, oral transmucosal delivery for the rapid absorption of lipophilic opioids. Available transmucosal fentanyl or buprenorphine products are approved for use only in cancer breakthrough pain, opioid addiction treatment, or chronic pain, and are not suitable for acute use in opioid-naive patients. Dr. Dennis Fisher of the P Less Than Company in San Francisco and colleagues at Certara Strategic Consulting, Leiden University Medical Center, and Accelerex Pharmaceuticals describe the pharmacokinetic characteristics of sublingually administered tablets containing 15 or 30 micrograms of sufentanil. They sampled blood from 120 healthy subjects in four studies and 940 patients in seven studies. Studies in healthy subjects determined bioavailability, the effect of inhibition of cytochrome P450-3A, and the plasma concentration profile with single and hourly sublingual sufentanil doses. Studies in patients evaluated the effects of weight, age, sex, and organ impairment on apparent clearance. The bioavailability of a single sublingual tablet was 52%, decreasing to 35% with repeat dosing. With sublingual administration of a newly developed 30 microgram sufentanil tablet, the time to maximum plasma concentration was approximately 1 hour. The analgesic threshold was typically reached at or before 30 minutes, which is consistent with the onset of analgesia observed in clinical trials of the 30 microgram product. The time for the plasma concentrations to decrease to below the analgesic threshold following a single 30 microgram dose was approximately 3 hours. The authors concluded that sublingual sufentanil tablets provide the opportunity to treat moderate to severe pain in a monitored setting non-invasively and rapidly. Our next study is an animal investigation of opioid-related sedation. Sedation is a well-known and problematic side effect of mu opioid agonists. We also know that the orexin-hypocretin system plays an important role in maintaining wakefulness. Dr. Satoshi Toyama of GK University and colleagues there and elsewhere in Japan used a rat model to explore the potential of a non-peptide orexin receptor agonist to alleviate morphine-induced sedative effects. They used the changes in electroencephalogram, locomotor activity, and acoustic startle response to evaluate morphine sedative effects. They examined the effects of intracerebroventricular orexin A and systemic orexin type 2 receptor agonist, YNT-185, on the EEG changes induced by morphine. They also examined effects of morphine administered with or without YNT-185 on locomotor activity and on acoustic startle response. EEG analysis revealed that morphine induced high amplitude, slow activity. Orexin agonists orexin A and YNT-185 attenuated these changes. Locomotor activity decreased after morphine, but did not change after morphine with YNT-185. Startle response latency was longer after morphine than after morphine plus YNT-185. The investigators concluded that orexin A and or YNT-185 attenuated morphine-induced sedative effects when assessed by EEG changes and behavioral measures in rats. These results suggest that orexin 2 receptor activation alleviates morphine-induced sedative effects. Our clinical focus review article this month addresses neurological considerations and complications related to liver transplantation. Dr. Satish Kumar and colleagues at the University of Michigan also discuss strategies to prevent, identify, and treat such adverse outcomes in the perioperative period. They note that outcomes after liver transplantation have markedly improved, but central nervous system complications remain common, potentially devastating, and frequently underappreciated by anesthesiologists. They recommend perioperative risk stratification and regular standard neurological examination. Future work targeting the use of new drugs to reduce the known mediators of hepatic encephalopathy is of importance, and the quest continues for immunosuppressive agents that are not associated with neurotoxicity. They end by noting that it is critically important that anesthesiologists collaboratively engage to evaluate effective monitoring of the brain for liver transplant recipients. Anesthesiologists must also evaluate interventions to mitigate and treat neurological complications in this population. Finally, this month's review article addresses abuse deterrent opioid formulations. It is written by Dr. Ron Littman of Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and colleagues at Drexel University and Washington University in St. Louis. They examine abuse-deterrent opioid formulations, which have been suggested as one way to decrease the abuse, addiction, and overdose of orally prescribed opioids. To date, 10 oral opioid formulations have received abuse-deterrent labeling by the U.S. FDA. The authors describe the mechanisms of abuse-deterrent technology, the types of pre-marketing studies required for FDA approval, the pharmacology of the currently approved abuse-deterrent opioid formulations, and the evidence for and against their influence on opioid abuse. They conclude that there is currently insufficient evidence to indicate that the availability of abuse-deterrent opioid formulations has altered the trajectory of opioid overdose and addiction. However, Post-marketing studies are in their infancy, and novel deterrent formulations are continually being developed and submitted for marketing approval. Thank you for joining me for this brief exploration of the exciting work being published in anesthesiology. I'll be back in a few weeks with highlights from the June issue.